Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
If you want to destroy my sweater, whoa, 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 pull this thread as I walk away. As I walk away, watch me unravel. I'll soon be naked, lying on the floor, lying on the floor. I've come undone.
Okay, right, we're done. That was great.
We got into it.
Yeah, we did. We could have just done the entire song, and that would have been the podcast, but that would have been boring, because you are now watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How is it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. So we're talking about something you ask us to talk about all the time, which is building budget commander decks. I know it can feel pretty tough to compete with like longtime players that have a lot of cards, expensive cards, large collections, and a lot of people feel like they can't keep up, but a lot of it has to do with building smartly. So,
yes.
You know, we get asked about this all the time, and unfortunately, we're not experts on the subject. However, for this episode, we brought on someone who is an expert. We have Mitch here from the Commander's Quarters YouTube channel.
Greetings.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
You have to say, how's it?
How's it? There we go.
Now you've officially been inducted into the show. Yeah, we get asked to talk about this all the time, and we also get asked to talk about it with you all the time, so this is nice. It's finally, everything has come together.
Perfect.
Well, I mean, I'm excited to learn about budget decks myself, so, and we played against Mitch a lot last night, so I got to see them in action, and let me just say, all of his decks can hang with all of our decks, so it's nice to know that if you build on budget, like, you're totally fine.
You are good to go.
Yeah. Before we get into it, we got to give some shout outs to our sponsors. We're going to talk about a bunch of budget cards this episode, and if you would like to get a hold of any of those cards, just use the affiliate link, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. You're going to buy Magic cards anyway. If you use our affiliate link, when you do, you really are supporting this show. Game Night's Extra Turns, which just came out, just made its return.
Yes.
All of our content, we really do appreciate everyone that uses that affiliate link.
Extra returns.
Extra returns.
Back now. Another great sponsor of the show, and one that we've been working with for a very long time, is Ultra Pro. Obviously, if you need anyone to help outfit your playmat, accessories, deck box, sleeves, dice, you name it, Ultra Pro has it. You can buy them for anything from their big box stores. You can go to your LGS as well as cardkingdom.com and purchase all that product and make your battlefield look sweet.
Yeah, you really can. And you want to protect your stuff, even if it's budget, right? You
know, absolutely.
And another way to support the show is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. In fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to
Kirk Robertson.
Kirk, you rock. Mitch was ready for it.
I was prepared. Yeah.
And we want to talk about one other thing really quick. If you haven't heard, we have just launched a Kickstarter.
Woohoo!
Yes.
That's right.
So if you want to help us support Game Nights, there's a stretch goal to make more episodes of Extra Turns. There's a bunch of cool rewards. What we're looking to do is upgrade some stuff around the office. Especially for me, computers is a big thing we need. Mm-hmm. The show's getting so complex now that honestly, like, we have some computers in the office that just can't even handle it. Like,
my computer literally shuts down half the building when I try to render stuff. It happened twice yesterday.
That's why the lights turned off.
Yeah.
Also, like, you can't see it, but the microphone that Mitch is using is like precariously balanced on two sandbags, wedged into a chair and hidden just from view, because that's what we have to work with. So yeah, a lot of upgrades to be made around the office. And if you want to check that out, you can go online. And we also have tons of really cool stretch goals.
Yeah, Mitch, I showed you this yesterday. Yeah, do you want to tell them about the coin?
Yeah, so this coin is absolutely fantastic. It's got the Game Nights logo on one side, and the other side is the tail side. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but it looks pretty sweet.
And it says, only one may stand.
Very true.
Yes. So if you want to get a hold of that coin and a bunch of other stuff, check out our Kickstarter. The links will be in the show notes. Okay. But let's stop talking about us here. Let's talk about Mitch and your channel. You've had a extremely meteoric rise. You started, what, within the last year or so?
Yeah, I started not this July, but the past one. So, yeah.
And you're about to hit 100,000 subscribers.
Getting very close.
So
yeah, I don't keep track of these things exactly, so I'm going to say something that's probably close to true. I don't know if it's absolutely true, but I think you're like the fastest growing Magic channel.
I haven't researched that, but sure, let's just say that.
It's got to be close. So, what you want to tell everybody out there a little bit about your channel?
Sure, yeah. My channel is pretty much about everything budget commander. I do budget deck techs. I go over underrated budget cards. Pretty much anything that you think about when you think about budget commander, I try to tackle it.
Nice.
You do a lot of deck techs. Some of them are nuts. Like, if you go to the Commander's Quarters page and look at the thumbnails, a lot of them are like $25 decks.
And say, I originally started at $25. And some of those, if you look back at the older ones, they might not still be $25 because prices do change. But at the time of building it, it was at $25. And currently I'm doing a $50 budget.
That's for the whole deck, though.
Whole deck. Entire deck, including shipping. Basic lands are not included. Provide your own.
That's, you can just go to an LGS and pick those
exactly,
up.
Exactly, yeah.
Jimmy and I do the like upgrade videos for the pre-cons, the Brawl decks and the C19 stuff. And we are like, we have to add 10 cards and our budget is $30. And we still are like,
struggle.
I can't
very
do it.
Hard. Yeah.
I'd be salivating over $30 for 10 cards.
Yeah, you build whole decks out of that. It's pretty, pretty cool. So anyway... Oh, gosh. I wanted to say that we are here partially, and I wanted to apologize to you personally because...
Oh, I need to apologize. It's my fault. I was the one that omitted it.
So the Commander Summit we did earlier this year, we went out to the community, and we asked everybody to answer all these questions, and they sent us in a bunch of video submissions. And if you watch those videos, Mitch wasn't there. And you might think, like, guys, why didn't you reach out to the fastest growing... Magic YouTube channel.
I like that's the tagline.
Yeah, I'm putting that now in my description.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's true. And the thing is, we did. Mitch provided us with awesome answers. If you've watched his stuff, it's very polished. You actually edited all the stuff.
Yep.
And then...
It was inserted into the teaser of everyone that was going to be on the episode. And I guess at some point that like checked a box because we had to go down and try and make sure that everyone got in there once. And then it just didn't make it into the final cut.
Well, you guys were trying to manage a lot. It's not that, it was not that big of a deal.
We're making it up to you now.
We feel really bad about it. So I'm glad we could make this happen. Okay, well, let's get into the main topic here, which is the best decks to build on a budget. So something I never really thought about before, but as you and I started corresponding, was this idea of like, and it makes sense, that some decks or archetypes or certain commanders are going to just work better as budget than others.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I thought that was really interesting and something everybody out there would want to know, which is like, if I know I'm a budget player and, you know, I have a limited amount of funds or a limited amount of access to cards or a smaller collection, or I'm just starting out, it's probably better to steer towards a commander or an archetype that's just naturally better suited to budget rather than accidentally pick something where it's just hard to make it good.
Sure.
Yeah. Like try and build a Jund deck. It's not going to be cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're trying to build kind of on a budget, it definitely, you can choose kind of more of a lane for commanders or archetypes that make it easier to build and make it, you have access to a wider variety of cards than if you choose one where you're kind of pigeonholed into using certain cards that might be too expensive for the budget.
Right.
Yeah, and there's not good replacements maybe. Yes. So then you're just creating a very weak version of the deck.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and that's okay with certain circumstances. You can make kind of any kind of deck on a budget. It's just how good you want to make that deck, how competitive does that have to be for your group, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of these decks too, they sort of span the types and varieties of decks. So even if you're a new player that says, I really want to do something that speaks to me, there's probably something in here that I think will of course speak to you.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that there's only like a couple of different archetypes. There's a bunch choose from, but you know, you may want to steer towards one of these just to give yourself a little bit better chance of hitting that power level you want. I had a question for you, Mitch. So what are some of the factors you considered when trying to determine if a given commander or archetype is going to work well on a budget?
Sure. I mean, I think it's somewhat similar to when you're just trying to build a powerful commander overall. Like if you see a new commander spoiled and it says draw a card on it, or it says, you know, it helps you ramp or whatnot, just the things that make a powerful commander in general, it's probably going to make for a good budget commander as well, because you're just going to be building around that commander. You also just might look for, again, we'll go through some of these archetypes and ones that can be budget friendly, ones that aren't necessarily so budget friendly, but you definitely, once you start building budget decks, kind of get a feel for, these are the types of cards that I still can include in a deck, and these are types of cards that I might not be able to. Like if you're trying to go for a Planeswalker heavy deck, that might not work out so well, because some of the best ones obviously are pretty expensive.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's not a lot of really cheap Planeswalkers.
Like Doubling Season are not on the cheap end either.
No, unfortunately not. So
Super Friends is not on our list of best decks to build.
No.
Well, let's start going down our list here.
But it doesn't mean you can't build a budget Super Friends deck. It just may not, like you said, tussle at the same level as someone else's deck.
You'll probably be using a lot of those uncommon ones from Ravnica. Yeah. So.
Some of them are good. Narset is a real creative, but I gotta say. Okay. So the first archetype we're going to talk about is Aristocrats, which is basically that archetype is sacking your own stuff on purpose.
Yep.
Yeah. Making a lot of stuff, draining life from multiple opponents or one opponent at a time, and playing an attrition long-term value game.
Yep. Gaining value from sacrificing your stuff.
So why would you say that Aristocrats is budget-friendly?
Aristocrats just has a bunch of options, and there's actually a couple of good commanders that you can work with, too. there are three basic things that you need when you're building an Aristocrat deck. You need a sacrifice outlet, you need things that want to be sacrificed, and you need things that give you value off of sacrificing things. Mm-hmm. And so when you have those kind of categories, there are a decent amount in each one that are budget friendly. There are plenty of options. Fanatical Devotion is a fantastic sacrifice outlet.
Yeah, if you guys don't know what this is, I've never seen this card in my life, and I'm going to say that for a lot of these, I'm sure. It's 2W for an enchantment that just says sacrifice a creature, regenerate target creature. Mm.
So that's just a free sac outlet.
It's a free sacrifice outlet in white, which you don't typically see, but then also it can protect whatever kind of main pieces you have, because you're going to be sacrificing things you want to sacrifice things anyway, but you can use those sacrifice creatures to protect one of your key pieces.
Your commander. Like a board wipe, too.
Essentially.
And notably, the creature you're regenerating doesn't need to actually do anything or have anything done to it. You're just putting a regeneration shield on it as it's in the rules.
Exactly. Other ones like the benefit payoff kind of cards like Zulaport Cutthroat or Pitiless Plunderer are great ones as well. Zulaport is great at draining out your opponents very quickly. Budget Blood Artist. It hits all of your opponents instead of targeted, though. But yeah, there is actually a budget version of Blood Artist. I think it's Falcon Wrath Aristocrat.
Yep.
But yeah, definitely a lot of budget options when it comes to that. And Wizards seems to keep printing.
Yeah, and those aren't in such high demand that you're not going to be able to find them, right?
Exactly.
Like Pitiless Plunder is just never going to be really expensive. That's great.
Yeah, that's been the golden pig in multiple episodes of my deck tech. So that thing's just, it does a lot of work.
That's one of the creatures.
Treasure when any of your creatures die. And that includes tokens as well, which is busted.
What are some commanders that would be really good for this style that sort of fit in that world? And notably, when I was reading through this, I was like, oh, interesting. A lot of these commanders are more powerful and they actually might cost more, but they're going to be maybe the biggest chunk of the budget, but they're so single-handedly powerful that you're able to take budget cards and put them around them and still make it really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Tasa Karlov, once she was spoiled, I think everyone knew she's just a fantastic, it's the reverse, Panharmonicon, essentially. Yeah, where when a creature dies that you control, it just doubles up the trigger.
Or any reverse Yarik.
Yeah, pretty much. She's fantastic. And then like Yawgmoth, like you said, like he might take up a bigger chunk of the budget, but Yawgmoth is a fantastic commander because he's a sac outlet, he's also a draw engine, and I mean essentially a board wipe too. So
removal spell,
exactly.
Yeah, and at a certain point, like the creatures you're sacking to him can be commons or they could be rares, but it's going to have the same effect off Yawgmoth, right?
So, exactly.
Right, that's really cool.
You got a couple other cards written down here as key cards that are budget.
Sure,
yeah, you want to talk about those?
Yeah, Pawn of Ulamog and Sifter of Skulls are pretty much the exact same thing. Basically, whenever you sacrifice a non-token creature, you're getting an Eldrazi Spawner, Eldrazi Scion, which are more things that you can then sacrifice, give you mana, just more things that basically generate. At a certain point in an Aristocrat deck, you're going to be set up with your engine, you're going to be set up with your sac outlet, and then one of these token producers where you're just sacking 5, 6, 7, 8 creatures and then getting more creatures back and then sacrificing those and then finishing off your opponents all at once or just getting so far ahead that it's going to be hard for them to stop you.
Yeah, notably Sifter of Skulls and Pawn of Ulamog. It's not even sacrificing, the creature just has to die.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because cards like Phyrexian Altar are very expensive.
Yep.
And when you're getting these little tokens that make colorless mana, it's colorless, but this is a much easier way to say, sack a creature, get something from it.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. All right, let's talk about the next archetype. It's Voltron.
One of my favorites. Josh plays it every day. It's crazy.
We have to
tell him to slow down.
Wait, I played 2 Voltron decks last night. I played a Greven deck and a Feather deck.
That's true.
I'm trying to, you know.
Red, white, and red, black. Definitely Josh's prime colors. You sound like me. What's happening?
I don't know.
Definitely won both of those games.
Greven does hit like a hammer.
He does.
So Voltron is basically the strategy of making like one super creature.
Yep.
Yeah. So why is Voltron a budget-friendly strategy?
I think one part of it is that, I mean, some of the higher-end players, the players that are willing to put more into their actual decks and buy, you know, the more expensive cards, aren't necessarily looking always to play Voltron. That might be part of it. Again, I don't have the statistics to back that up, but that's just kind of a
You're the budget expert, so you can just testify as an expert.
Exactly. I'm 100% expert. I say this guaranteed.
Well, who has spent more time, you know? Very few people in the community have spent as much time, I think, as you, really focusing on budget.
That's true.
A good point. Voltron is a less popular strategy,
yep.
And so those cards are going to be less in demand.
Yep.
Or just, and as is the case with so many commander cards, overlooked.
There's
so many cards, it's so easy to be like, oh, I've never heard of that before. It's 10 cents. Amazing.
Absolutely. And there's just a lot of cards kind of in those... in the categories that you need for a Voltron deck, where you have, you just want to pump your commander, you want to protect your commander, there's a ton of cards that can do that effectively. And depending on the commander that you need, Let's say you're playing Nezahal, which was, I think, the first deck tech that I actually did.
Oh, cool.
Starts off as a 7-7. So essentially, to kill an opponent, you need 3 hits.
Mm-hmm.
If you get him to 11, so you just need some things that pump him by 4, that's just 2 hits. If you can get him to 21, which there are plenty of ways to do that as well, that's 1 hit. So there's a lot of different cards that can help do that. And because of that, there's just a lot of options and a lot of cards that aren't expensive. There's no expensive cards, I think, in Voltron decks that you necessarily just have to have or the deck won't work.
Right. Oh, okay, so let's talk about some key cards in this strategy. You've got some equipment written down here, a bunch.
Yeah. So equipment's big in Voltron decks for the most part, because even if your commander dies, they stay on the field and then you can re-equip. So Blackblade Reforged, Inquisitor's Flail are two of the big ones. Blackblade Reforged essentially is just going to pump your commander based off the amount of lands that you have.
And it costs much less to equip a legendary creature,
exactly,
which would be your commander.
Yep.
Deck on Blackblade Sword.
Yes, it is.
How cool.
It's very cool.
And then Inquisitor's Flail source has the old school double strike text, which is if equipped creature would deal combat damage, it deals double that combat damage. And then if another creature would deal combat damage to the equipped creature, it deals double that damage as well. So it's kind of...
Does that stack with double strike though?
Yes. So that stacks with double strike, which is why if you put it on a 7-7, it's 14 and then 28. So it's
insta-kale.
A 1-hit kill. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, then that second part definitely can come into play for certain strategies, but for the most part with Voltron decks, you're going to have ways to get your commander through or to protect your commander. So you're not going to really worry about that second part about twice as much damage to the commander.
Well, one of those cards... Prowler's Helm,
yep,
which is just like, how do you give your commander unblockable? And it does say equipped creature can't be blocked except by walls. As
and there's a ton of walls running around.
Yeah. I mean, sure, we have a few more because of Pramacon and all those guys coming out now. But in general, yeah, this creature is getting through.
Yes. Yeah. And so Prowler's Helm, there's plenty of other great options. That even if you just give your commander flying most times, you can get through on one player.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm.
I like the next one because in parentheses you put, depending on when reprinted, this can be budget.
That's a good point.
True.
I remember when I first started, this card was budget.
Yeah. Yes. So it's Swiftfoot Boots, which fluctuates wildly because if it's in like a precon or something, it'll drop a lot. And then over time, it'll slowly creep back up. So something about being budget is I'm assuming, being aware of that kind of dynamic.
100%. And I'm not going to give away any trade secrets, but yeah, after some cards are reprinted, I may build decks around those cards just because there's only a certain amount of time that I'm going to have to be able to fit that into the budget. So,
okay. Yeah. And that's, I mean, like, it's something
not gonna
that...
not going to give any trade secrets away to 100,000 people out there.
Don't listen to this. Skip this part.
Well, it's pretty easy. If it gets reprinted, it's a pretty good time to pick up that card.
Yep, exactly. Another one, I mean, and then if you're going with another commander, actually, it's one of my personal favorites, and the first decks I built was SRAM after I watched a Game Nights episode, actually.
Oh, yeah. But it's been a great deck.
Yeah. I didn't go with equipment, though. I went with auras, and there's only certain commanders that can do that because, again, if you, with an aura, your commander dies, you're not getting that back most of the time. And so with SRAM, though, he's replacing all the cards that you're casting, though, because whenever you cast an aura, you draw a card. So he's just a very powerful draw engine that can play with a lot of powerful auras. So Shielded by Faith is fantastic. It protects your commander, and if something else comes into play, you can decide to move it, but you're not going to do that.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of Gift of Immortality.
Yep.
Just one that's like, it's kind of hard to get rid of because it can switch onto other targets.
Exactly. And then another one is Ethereal Armor. You just have a bunch of really cheaply costed auras that can really pump your commander quickly. So I think that they only cost a white, I believe, and it gives +1/+1 for each enchantment you control and first strike.
Yeah.
Oh,
I was going to say, a lot of times commons in sets are built to help the limited environment out, and they're going to throw in random combat tricks or random things like Team or Battle Rage.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can pay attention to those sets, you'll find the ones that really do shine through. And because they're common, so many are printed. Even if they're in super, super high demand, they're still going to maintain a really low price point.
Absolutely.
I would think also that building aura-based would be more, like, a lot cheaper than building equipment-based, because we just see more equipment throughout the format than we do aura stuff.
Yeah, it definitely could be, or definitely is, I would say. But yeah, the higher end equipment, like the swords, you're not going to include in a budget.
Right.
But yeah, you still can have that effective but cheaper equipment. But yeah, still, I'd say auras are definitely the cheapest way to go if you're looking to go that way.
SRAM is a sweet deck. I would encourage anyone out there to play it.
Build a feather deck.
Yeah,
feather's another way to go about it because, again, that's kind of like SRAM where
you're not going to be able to get that same resource value from other commanders.
Feather's another way to go about it because, again,
that's kind of like combat tricks are useful for those other commanders, but for Feather, they're fantastic. You can draw a ton of cards. You can do a lot of damage quickly.
Right. Built to Smash is not ever going to be an expensive card.
No.
And commander demand ain't going to drive it up. So,
exactly.
Feather loves it. Yes.
Team or Battle Rage, like you said, another all-star in that game or in that deck. All right. Let's move on to the next archetype that we like building under a budget. This is close to my own heart. It's a politics deck.
Yep.
So this is decks that focus around the social aspect of EDH. And I'm going to ask you the question, but I think I know the answer. Why are politics decks budget friendly?
Politics decks are budget friendly because you can build them in a variety of ways, I think. And also, a lot of them are very dependent on the commander, at least the ones that I tend to go towards, where you're building with a commander as kind of like the engine of the deck, as well as kind of like your political tool. And then most of the other cards are, you've got some politics cards in there where you can, you know, make deals and stuff like that. But you're also just kind of working to protect yourself while, you know, kind of working to control certain aspects of the game so you can more incentivize your opponents to make deals with you.
Yeah,
and I put in parentheses, words cost nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. I mean, we always do talk about how when you play Commander, like if your deck's a 7, you can make it an 8 by playing it better with the politics around the table. And so obviously the number one creature I think about is just Feldegriff
comes up.
Yeah, just everyone's happy Hippopotamus.
Happy Potamus. I like that. Yeah.
I like that you also put down a new Commander, and I saw this deck in action, and you might out there too soon enough. Yep. Kenrith, the Return King.
Yeah, Kenrith's, but when I saw Kenrith spoiled, I was like, this is kind of Feldegriff. I wouldn't say 2.0, but 1.5.
Yeah, I think it's the best, just like, if you want to use it in that setting. Obviously, there are plenty of ways to make it super competitive, too. Mm-hmm. Do you find that if you're building or bringing a deck like Kenrith to the table, you need to let people know far in advance that this is not a Kenrith win the game deck, this is a politics deck, this is a group hug kind of situation?
I would say that, yeah, if you're an LGS, playing with people you don't know, then yes. If people kind of know who you are and what kind of decks that you play, you know, your friend group, they won't just kill you right away just because they see that commander necessarily. They might kind of give you the benefit of the doubt before you go into it. But yeah, you could obviously generate infinite mana and just kill with Kenrith automatically.
Right.
But yeah, I would say that Kenrith just is a very versatile commander where you can take him in a lot of different directions. You can go ultra competitive. You can go political. He just has a lot of different options on
even just
can do
within his abilities. You could go towards the draw cards. You could go towards the recursion. You could go towards the
+1/+1 trample.
Counters.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty crazy.
Kenrith Voltron.
you probably could.
Let's talk about some key politics cards that are in the budget range.
Sure. Yeah. So again, I mentioned like protection spells. So you've got
Seer of Safety, which unfortunately keeps going up.
And I would like reprinted at some point.
Yeah, well, when like Propaganda and Ghostly Prison are on the rise.
Seer of Safety, which unfortunately keeps going up. Saying Ghostly Prison finally just got reprinted and went down a little bit, so that might be able to squeeze into a budget. But yeah, those kind of types of taxing effects to attack you are fantastic. So you've got other ones like Baird. There's that new one that just got printed, and last set's escaping my mind.
Oh, the flying 3/2 one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Archon, something Archon?
Something like that,
So, it's a like a half a propaganda.
Yeah, it's pay one. Yeah. So even the pay ones, though, like Baird as well, like it's enough incentive for someone to decide to swing elsewhere. People don't like to waste their mana, and when you're trying to justify attacking, especially if you've got, you know, a go-wide strategy, there's no way you're going to pay for every single one of those, so.
Yeah, I think something to pay attention to is a lot of times people will make obsolescence charts on Reddit and stuff online, which is basically like if a better version of a card is printed, just strictly better than the old one, they'll show here's the old one, here's the new one in like Throne of Eldraine or whatever it is. And that's a great place also for people usually say like here's a new version of Ghostly Prison or of Sphere of Safety or of Baird, but it's on the creature form. So Wizards may not exactly reprint the thing you want, but they're putting some versions of it into future sets.
Absolutely.
So it seems like, at least. This next one is from Throne of Eldraine, and I've lost to it many times
in draft.
It's Revenge of Ravens. It's a 4-mana and shaman. Whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, that creature's controller loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. And this is per creature.
Yes.
So this would just completely stop people from attacking you too if they just don't want the instant life damage. If it's like I have 2 attacks, one I'm going to lose 5 life when I do it, and the other one I'm just going to not, they're going to go the other direction.
Well, it's not even lose 5 life. It's you lose 5 life and the other person gains 5 life, too. So you're benefiting them, but yeah.
Yeah, I like that card a lot.
That's a great one.
And then Illusionist Gambit is a card you like a lot, too?
Yeah, Illusionist Gambit, just, I think, and the more people play against you when you're playing these politics decks, if they know you kind of have these combat trick cards in your deck, they're going to be less hesitant to attack you anyway when you've got that mana up, even if you don't have those Ghostly Prison effects on the board.
Right.
So Illusionist Gambit, basically, if someone swings at you, you say, turn your creatures around and swing elsewhere. So
it can be a board wipe at a certain point.
Because if they have a beneficial attack to you, they might not have one to someone else, and they're just swinging into disaster.
It can be a board wipe at a
certain
point.
And Goad is a very similar mechanic, too, that at least diverts attention from you.
Yes.
I mean, Illusionist Gambit's way worse because they don't can't plan for it.
Yeah, it just comes out of nowhere.
It is.
And you were, like, specifically attack that person, not you choose, right?
I don't think you get to choose. I think they have to swing it. They have to swing it any other opponent.
Anyone, yeah, can't attack you or a planeswalker you control that combat. Diversion.
So if there's only one other player at the time, then yes. So.
Yeah. Reigns of Power is the last card on the politics side.
Yeah.
How, I've never played this card. I've looked at it a lot. I thought it's really fun to play. How does it work usually when you switch creatures with someone else?
Sure. So I'll give the Feldegriff example. So Feldegriff is probably my favorite deck to have this in because essentially with Feldegriff, you're trying to give one person an army of hippos, which is just the best thing ever in Magic. So you just give one person hippos. You say, go swing at other people with these hippos. They do that. They kill them. And then once they're done doing all of your dirty work for you, you cast Reigns of Power. You take their creatures and then you swing out at them.
And so they have nothing from your side.
Yeah, they'll have like Feldegriff, or you could even bounce Feldegriff back to your hand before you do that. And yes, exactly. They have nothing, you've got everything. But it even works in a defensive situation too. So if one of my opponents is swinging out with me with their army, I can trade my Feldegriff for someone else's army and then block with that. So it's just a very versatile card. And actually, there's an application that I love with it because
Cyclonic Rift is very much a card that you will see in this format.
Someone casts a Cyclonic Rift, exchange creatures with them, they bounce their
Cyclonic Rift is very much a card that you will see in this format.
That's actually amazing.
Many times, and it's hilarious when it happens.
Let's read the card really quick.
Yeah, so Reigns of Power is 2 blue-blue for an instant. Untap all creatures you control and all creatures target opponent controls. You and that opponent each gain control of all of the creatures the other controls until end of turn, and those creatures gain haste until end of turn. So if I have a board state with 5 creatures and Josh has one with 1, Josh plays this, he gives me 1 creature, Josh gets 5, and all those creatures have haste all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's just till end of turn, but I never thought of this as a Cyclonic Rift thing.
Yeah.
I've definitely had Reigns of Power end games when other people have cast it on me.
Yeah.
But usually that's just because they're like, I grab your stuff and hit you with it.
Yeah.
It's like a Cyclonic Rift thing is awesome.
Yeah, Cyclonic Rift tech. Yeah. Look at that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, we've got some more archetypes to go through in just a second, but before we get into that, we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
All right, we are back, and let's keep talking. Right now, we've covered Aristocrats, Voltron, and Politics. You want to introduce the next one? This one might be the one that I think has gotten the most popularity recently, just because of the commanders printed.
This was the most surprising to me on your list. When I saw it, I was like, really? You can do that on a budget?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so it's Artifacts or Artifact Storm.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think that Artifacts, because they are, like, if there's an Artifact, then every deck wants it.
Yep.
So I would think that it would be more in demand, and therefore those really important artifacts would be more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it budget friendly?
I'd say there's just as many artifacts that are in demand and expensive as there are ones that aren't in demand and that fit perfectly in these types of decks. Mm-hmm. I'll give an example of Joyra Weatherlight Captain, which is one of the first decks I built. And as soon as it was spoiled, it was like the commander I was looking for forever.
Mm-hmm.
I think Vidalcan
Archmage is the other one that draws cards, but it wasn't legendary. And I was like, I need a legendary that does this.
basically Archmage, any artifact in that deck draws a cantrip, but it wasn't legendary. Right. And I was like, I need a legendary that does
if you've
this.
Got artifacts
that come into play and draw you a card, they're netting you two cards for one card. And all those artifacts that do that, that cost two, are nothing in Commander. They have no application, but there are very few decks that actually want those, like Prophetic Prism.
Right.
Sabo's Web. They have like old cards that
Golden
just,
Egg from the new
Golden
set.
Golden Egg from the new set. Just cards that just happen to have that on there because they don't really have too many other effects at two mana. Cantripping is fantastic in those decks. There's also just a bunch of other cheap cards, too.
Oh, yeah, we got some rocks up in here.
There we go. Yeah, so you've got a bunch of mana rocks that are very expensive and great that would be fantastic in these decks, like Mox. You've got, right. Sol Ring. You've got Sol Ring's not even that obviously not expensive, but in a budget, when you're constrained, you're not exactly going to use that. But there's plenty of ones that are just fantastic in those decks anyways, like Fractured Power Stone, Guardian Idol, Mannequin, ones that don't get play anywhere else. And so that kind of lowers the cost of your deck just on their own. So you might be able to include some of the higher end cards if you have to.
Like a couple because you've saved money elsewhere.
Exactly. Those are 10-cent cards. So you can just include, your money elsewhere. And that might be some of your... you're also looking to include some reducers as well in those decks, where if you can get your artifacts to cost nothing, then you're just going to be storming off and casting a ton of artifacts at once. So Ethereum Sculptor, Joyous Familiar, Herald of Kozluk are all cheap ones. You've got some more expensive ones, like Semblance Anvil, that's gone up just a little bit lately. But you can still, again, include some of those once you reduce the cost.
Mm-hmm. And those are often better than rocks in decks with a lot of artifacts, because a rock's going to tap for one mana.
Mm-hmm.
But if you cast three spells in a turn, you just save three mana with Ethereum Sculptor. Yeah,
absolutely.
And yeah, all those are very cheap. Ethereum Sculptor is like,
we've
super
seen
cheap.
It a bunch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can get them out super early, which is important. And if you have multiples, that's as good, if not better, than a ramp spell over the long or a ramp, like, a card or an artifact they have to tap.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have to untap it to get the reduction on the next thing, right?
Yep.
Like the Ethereum Sculptor is always going to give you one less on everything.
Absolutely.
You don't need to like untap a Fractured Power Stone to do that.
Yep.
Obviously, we just talked about the cantrips. So Alchemist Vial, Elsewhere Flask, and Prophetic Prism are all artifacts that when they enter the battlefield, you draw a card and then they have some other ability attached to them. But Joyra, obviously, just takes that and runs with it.
Yep. Absolutely.
And then I like this last category a lot, Bounce. I've seen this a lot in Legacy, but Paradoxical Outcome is a card that is just taking sort of...
Modern now.
Yeah, Modern now too, yep. So unfortunately, that card might go up just a little bit, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's definitely creeping up right now.
Wurza decks, I think they call them.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Wurza?
Because War of Adventure.
That's funny. Yeah, Paradoxical Outcome, it's 3 and a blue for an instant. Return any number of target non-land, non-token permanents you control to their owner's hands. Draw a card for each card returned to your hand this way. So if you have like two reductions, like if you have -2 on artifacts and you can bounce your Perfect Prisms and all those like cantrips, you just play them all out immediately and boom, you just go.
You just draw 20 cards in a turn, cast more artifacts for free, draw through your entire deck, and then
Do you usually put in like a Storm Finisher?
Yeah, so a Storm Finisher that I used to love that has actually gone out of budget, unfortunately, Aetherflex Reservoir. But again, if you're able to, cut some budget in other parts of the deck, you could still potentially include it. But one of my favorite ones actually is Temporal Fissure, which is just a very hard
finisher to stop because it's got Storm.
Yeah.
So,
do you want to read it,
Jimmy? It's from Scourge, so it's an older card. And it's 4 and a blue, sorcery, return target permanent to its owner's hand, and Storm. So if you cast 50 spells, you get to return 51 permanents to their owner's hands.
Yeah.
Like infinite mana with Capsize with Buyback, basically.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, you just bounce everything, including your lands.
And honestly, Capsize with Buyback is really hard to pull off sometimes, because you need the one blue. Temporal Fissure just does it for 4 and a blue if you're able. Even if you're doing it for like 6 or 7, that's huge, right?
It can still be effective. And you can use it on your own permanents too, which is the best thing. So this can either be an enabler where it's a bounce spell, or it can be a finisher where you bounce all of your opponent's lands and then that's just game.
That's awesome. That's a good card. I pulled the paper back, if anybody noticed that, because I wanted to ask the question, what are some good commanders? Obviously, Joyra, you already mentioned.
Yep.
One of our preview cards is on. Two of our preview cards are on here.
You're welcome.
I know, right?
So Elsha and Urza, both very good with these types of decks,
Yeah, and Urza is definitely more expensive. But I've seen this a lot, right? Where it's like, person opens a booster pack, they get this really cool commander.
Yeah.
And from there, it's like, how can I build a budget around that?
Exactly.
And I think going into it being like, I need to get an Urza to do this is not necessarily the right way to approach a budget. And like, sometimes you just have a really expensive or just a more expensive commander that you can then transform into the one of these archetypes.
Yep. Or you've got a friend that's wanting to trade you it and that kind of stuff too.
Right.
I also think if you're going to allocate a large amount of your budget for a deck on one card, it should be the commander probably, because you're going to have access to that card and play that card every game, where any given one card in your 99 isn't going to come up that much. So if you're going to like park a bunch of your resources on one card, but it's like in the 99,
that's true.
It's just not as cool because you're not going to draw that as much. I'd much rather it be, it's my commander. So I see that thing every game and I really feel like I got my money's worth out of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next archetype that is good on a budget. It's combo.
By the way, I like that budget. You can be mean with like a Storm deck, and you can also combo off. Budget doesn't stop you from doing anything that regular Magic does. You're just saving money while you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about combo. Why is combo? I think we hear combo and we think the highest tuned CDH decks, which are usually expensive.
Right. Yes.
So why is combo budget friendly?
So there are definitely expensive combos out there, but there are plenty. I mean, there's just the amount of Magic cards that are out there, there's just a ton of combinations of cards that are bound to be broken together, and because of that there's a lot of budget cards that actually just work really well together. So you've got a Peregrine Drake, which is a fantastic combo card, and it is 30 cents or something like that, so it's just very cheap and it can be used in a lot of different decks for combos.
Five mana, 2/2, 2/2, or 2/3.
Flying.
Untaps five lands when it comes to
play. Yeah, when it comes to the battlefield, untap five lands. Obviously, if you have your Temple of the False Gods out, your Bounce lands, your Gain.
Scourge
of
Popper, Peregrine Drake.
Is it banned in Popper?
Yeah, it is banned now.
Oh, really?
Makes sense.
Well, hey, actually,
because it was broken.
That's a great sign, too, right? If a card's banned in Popper, a format that only wants commons, which usually are the cheapest, it's probably good enough for Commander.
That's a good call.
Yeah, that's a good call.
There's also a card like Vigor, which is this giant.
I really like these next two.
Yeah, but it makes a lot of sense too, especially when we go back and talk about some of the commanders that are good with combo. But Vigor is just a huge 6/6 trampler, and it sort of puts counters on creatures if damage is dealt to them. But more importantly, if it's put into the graveyard from anywhere, shuffle it into its owner's library. Yep. So
there's a cycle of these for each color.
There are.
Yeah.
And you have Vigor and Dread.
Vigor and Dread were the two that came up in a deck that they're not the cheapest cards, unfortunately. That, I mean, for building for budget players. Combo, so I think Vigor is around 4 or 5, which is
Dread's
hard to
about
in.
The same too.
Dread's about the same, and so but they're definitely worth squeezing in a deck versus an Eldrazi Titan, which is there's only so many creatures or so many cards in Magic that actually do what that does, shuffling back in your library whenever they hit the graveyard from anywhere. Mm-hmm. And the Titans are $30 a piece or whatnot, so those just cannot be included, unfortunately.
A lot of decks do want a shuffler because they're going to draw their entire deck and be in danger of decking if they don't. Gitrog is the one we have written down.
Yep.
Green and black, of course, Vigor and Dread.
Yep.
So $4, a little bit on the high end of the budget range, but when you compare it to Kozilek or Ulamog, the originals that do the shuffling thing, they're, you know, 1/10 their price. So as a replacement for those cards, when you really, you know, they're in there for that effect, then it's a pretty good deal.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that a lot. the next ones are actually also fill-ins for something like Snapcaster Mage and that stuff. And in Commander, I've found a lot of these to be better than Snappy sometimes.
Yes, right.
So you've got Archaeomancer, Mnemonic Wall, Salvager of Secrets, which are all creatures that get you an instant or sorcery back from your graveyard into your hand when they enter the battlefield.
Yep. So these can really be busted with things like Ghostly Flicker, Illusionist Stratagem, things like that, where basically you just can continually get that card back and then bounce it back and bounce it back. There are ways to go infinite with that with other cards like Dualcaster Mage, Narumeha, things like that, where they basically copy an instant sorcery when they come to play.
Yep.
Got a couple of deck techs that have those combos just all in them. So there's a lot of... And the thing with Archaeomancer and Mnemonic Wall, Salvager of Secrets, there's also like 2 or 3 other creatures that do that exact same thing. So just kind of having a bunch of the same effect throughout your deck just makes it a lot easier to get to, a lot easier to find, and a lot easier to combo off when you want to.
And one of the commanders you have written down as one of the best budget combo commanders is Yarok.
Yarok.
Who's going to work really, really good with Archaeomancer.
Absolutely.
Right? Because you get 2 instances of sorceries back.
Yep.
Yeah. This next one is an interesting one, and I believe the Spike Feeders did. I think I saw this on one of their videos. I believe if the Spike Feeders are a CEDH YouTube channel, so they're talking about it, it must be very, very powerful.
Yep. Yeah.
It's Tidespout Tyrants. Yes. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I'll read it first. It's 5BBB, so 8 mana for a 5/5 flyer, and it says, whenever you cast a spell, return target permanent to its owner's hand.
Yeah, so I think the way the Spike Feeders showed it in their videos, and they had
they were like, is this the next Paradox Engine or something like that?
They have like explaining kind of how a combo works. Know your combo, I think they
Better
call
know
it.
A combo.
Better know a combo. There you go, thank you. And yeah, I believe the combo that they showed off was a very simple one. You've got Tidestone Tyrant in play, Sol Ring, and then I think...
essentially you cast the Ornithopter, you tap the Soul Ring for mana in response.
Any zero mana artifact, like an Ornithopter. Hand.
You then essentially with one of the mana, you cast the Soul Ring, tap it again, bouncing back the Ornithopter, so on and so forth. You have infinite mana just with, you know, three simple easy cards. So
and infinite Storm Count.
Infinite Storm Count, infinite lot of things. Tidespawn Tyrant, and then again, can also be a finisher because you can also bounce any permanent, so you bounce all your opponent's lands, you bounce your opponent's everything, they lose.
Yeah, generating infinite mana, if those of you don't understand, you need to have an Ornithopter on the board too, because when you recast your Soul Ring, Tidespawn Siren is a cast trigger, so you bounce the free Ornithopter, your Soul Ring comes down, you have one mana floating, float another two mana, play the Ornithopter and repeat the process, and you're just going to gain one colorless every single time.
Yep.
Pretty powerful.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, Soul Ring busted because it's a card that creates more mana than it costs.
Yeah, go figure.
Go figure.
All right, let's go to our sixth and final best archetype to build on a budget, and this one is big mana.
Yeah, so these are the Timmy of them all, right?
Yeah.
The Timmiest.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call these Timmy.
Yeah, these days I feel like big mana decks are among the most powerful, and this one makes sense to me because big mana decks, are generally thought of as decks that are going to spend a lot of time getting a lot of mana out onto the battlefield and then cast huge things.
Yep.
It can be also Jota-style decks that are going to cheat big things out. That can be in the same category.
Yeah, they definitely can be.
Yeah. So a lot of the big spells themselves are not actually that expensive
because
they don't get played in Modern and Legacy, and they're not super efficient, and CEDH players won't run a lot of that stuff too, so the demand is a little bit lower.
Yep. And people don't even run them that much in Commander because putting so many 7, 8, 9 mana cards in your deck is just untenable.
Or like a Cruel Ultimatum, which is just very hard to cast because of its mana cost.
So let's talk about some of the key cards in the big mana category, which are a lot of these big, expensive, I mean, not expensive dollar-wise, but CMC-wise.
Yeah.
So, first one up is Amanatu's Augury, which is one of my personal favorites.
I got to cast it last night,
which was, I think it whiffed pretty hard.
I think you cast it a couple times, or was that, no, you cast something off it a couple times.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Actually, two of these cards came out last night. Three of these cards came out last night. Oh my gosh.
I like big mana decks.
So, Amanatu's Augury is a lot of text. 6 blue-blue for a sorcery. Exile the top 8 cards of your library. You may put a land card from among them onto the battlefield. Until end of turn, for each non-land card type, you may cast a card of that type from among the exile cards without paying its mana cost.
Yep. So this can just lead to some really big and busted turns where you're casting other huge converted mana cost spells that do absurd things as well, and just kind of continuing on that giant turn where you're essentially cheating on mana cost, even though you're casting an 8-mana spell.
And you're ramping in blue.
Yes. 30 mana worth of, you can get 30 mana worth of stuff for your 8-mana, which is cheating on mana cost.
Yes.
Yeah. The next one is Conflux,
yep. Yeah, so
tutor up a card of each color, basically.
Yep.
For a grand total of 8 mana as a sorcery.
Yeah, so this is kind of a enabler or finisher in a deck, basically, where you're casting, you're finding the exact cards that you need. If you need to wipe the board, you can. If you need a mana doubler, you got that. If you need something to finish everyone off, you've got that too. But yeah, getting 5 cards for 8 mana is a great deal.
And obviously, you can get dual color cards or 3 color cards, and those count for each of the categories, so you can get multiples there.
And you're in big mana, so you probably have a lot of mana when you're doing that. So you're like, do this, get this, cast something, probably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The next one was a card you got off Aminatu's Augury, I think, last night. It was Swarm Intelligence.
Yep. Oh, gosh. Imagine if that was out when you cast Aminatu's Augury.
It was when he cast, I think you got like an extra turn spell or something.
What's the you gain
part
control
the water veil?
Yeah, that one, and then also gaining control of someone's turn, too. What was that one?
Oh, yeah.
Worst Fears
with this out. So Swarm Intelligence is an enchantment that basically forks all of your instants and sorceries.
Yep.
So anytime you cast an instant sorcery, make a copy of it, choose new targets, blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a 7 mana enchantment, but it's well worth the cost. It makes up for that very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I've found playing more recently is sometimes games, if they don't come to a very quick end, they'll stall out and you'll just be able to resolve giant things, 7, 8 mana, and sometimes even get the turn back because everyone in the house at that point has to deal with something that is more threatening. And a card like Swarm Intelligence is threatening, but is it as threatening as a Kozilek?
That's true.
Is it even as threatening as like an Aura Shards, right?
Yeah.
Because you're like, Swarm Intelligence, what do they have? They might not even have a good instant or sorcery. So, you know, often you can cast it past turn and then it comes back to you and you're like, okay, you know, Aminatu's Augury, let's have two of those. And then everything I cast off Aminatu's Augury, let's have two of those. Yeah, pretty sweet. Yep. All right, let's talk about the last two here.
Yeah, sure. So in Garrick's Wake, it's just a great board wipe. Costs 9 mana, though. But in a big mana deck, that doesn't matter. So you can run the like most effective board wipes out there, which, again, aren't that expensive because they do cost 9 mana.
In Garrick's Wake is all creatures and planeswalkers you don't control,
Yep.
And then Treacherous Terrain, I really like this edition here because big creatures you don't control, Golos and Jota, these are the commanders, they're five color. And this is a card that actually was printed with the four color commanders because it has basic land cycling on it. So you can discard it and grab whatever you want, or you can use it for its first half, which deals damage to each opponent equal to the number of lands that players control.
Yeah, so it's a great early card if you need to fix your mana, but it's also a great finisher too, because these types of decks usually have ways to recur or recast things anyway. So you can cast it once, and if you've got a Swarm Intelligence out too, you're doubling that up, hitting everyone for 20, and then you can get it back, you can do it again, and it's hard for you to survive if you're casting that multiple times.
It sort of seems like the big mana decks, they got the top end what they're going to do with the mana figured out. If do you feel that like how I get my ramp going is sort of the harder part of the equation as far as budget, because it feels like those cards are used in a lot more decks. Go ahead.
No, so they're definitely using a lot more decks. I'd say there's a lot of good budget options. And actually, I think I've got a ramp episode coming up at some point where I just kind of highlight like $2 or less ramp cards.
Like a package of them?
Yeah, pretty much. Like you can just see like, okay, there's a just ton of options. I kind of was surprised as I was going through that just to see, yeah, actually, this one's under $2 too. This one's under $2. And, but there's just a lot of, in those decks, you're looking for a kind of a massive amount of ramp cards, because if you've got a commander like, let's say, Golos is like your engine. It doesn't matter if you just keep ramping. That's just going to help you more and more and more, because you're just going to feed that mana into him, and then he's going to cast the spell or get the spells off the top for you.
Yeah, you don't care if you flood, basically.
No, exactly. Yeah. So you can run 20 ramp cards. You know, let's say 15 of them are, you know, standard ramp cards like your Explosive Vegetation, your Farseek, but then you've got some mass ramp double up your lands then, and then you're really going off. And there's just a lot of options that you have when you're running, especially five color spells deck, like Dictator Care Measure, need to run the Signets, the Talismans, and that kind of stuff. In certain decks, you can. So
right. Yeah, sometimes people hear five color and think, I have to be high budget for this because I need to get these dual lands and all this and that. It's like, definitely. No, the tri-lands are cheap. There's so many different ways to get a bunch of mana on the battlefield, too.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, that obviously would help, but there's definitely ways that you can do it where you can focus a deck enough and have enough ramp cards, have enough fixing cards where, I mean, most of my Jota deck, my Golos deck, my Kenrith deck, and people always get surprised by that when I'm running a five color deck. And I think you were surprised last night when I cast Early Harvest.
Majority of the lands in there are
basics. Which only untaps basics, but all my lands are basics.
Yeah, so I would never think to put that in a five color deck. But I do remember noticing, I was like, yeah, looking over, you're playing five color deck multiple times. You know, played the Kenrith deck, played the Golos deck a couple of times, and just all your land, literally all your lands were basics. And I was like, man, that just worked out fine. You never had a problem this whole game. So something, you're doing something right.
Yeah, I'm really good at stacking decks.
Yeah, stacking them with Scroll Rack.
You had enough of the Secure Tribe Elder of Farseek here, and you just fill in the gaps, and it was totally fine. It wasn't like you didn't need a bunch of dual lands. Yeah. All right, so that's going to wrap up the archetypes we're going to talk about for the budget episode here. But before we move on to the listeners, I wanted to ask you, what are some archetypes that are harder to build on a budget? So Super Friends, we already sort of discussed.
There are definitely a couple. They can still be done. Super Friends is definitely one where, you know, just unfortunately, a lot of the best Planeswalkers out there are expensive.
Yeah,
The commanders for it, too. And then also, your
Doubling Season, things that essentially are broken with
Super Deep Glow Skate.
Deep Glow Skate. Right.
Liliana's Veil.
Chain Veil.
Doubling Season.
Yeah.
Things
that
essentially
are
broken.
So I
don't Super
either.
Friends. Deep Low Skate.
Yeah, a lot of them are fairy deck. Okay, keep going.
A lot of them are really expensive. Another one would be stacks. Just a lot of stacks cards. The better end of stacks cards can be pretty expensive. There are ways to do it. I did an episode actually with a professor where I made a Azur the Enchanter stacks deck, because Azur can tutor out, you know, you may only have three or four really effective stacks cards in that deck,
but
you can get them, and you can protect them, and you can ensure that your opponents are getting punished for playing against you.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Stacks.
All right. So maybe, you know, if you're just starting out or new to the budget space, you know, maybe save Super Friends and stacks for a little bit later on. It's not like you can't do it. It's
absolutely
just not for the faint of heart.
You can do it, but I'd say that kind of, if you're looking to start building budget decks, try to focus on the archetypes that we've gone over and that make that are a bit easier to kind of get into and jump into, and then you'll start to learn some more of the cards. And hey, I mean, I kind of know, and it's kind of funny when I see my friends play decks, if they're playing a more expensive card, I know what the card is, but I know that I'm not going to be able to include it in my decks unless the thing's reprinted. So I'm looking out for it if it's coming up in the next set or something like that, and I see this really cool card, and I'm like, oh, it got reprinted. Maybe I can fit it in there now. So,
Yeah, I like the creativity that building on a budget makes you have. Mm-hmm. Like what we were saying about Golos, I think was really apt, which is just like, you can draw a bunch of lands in that deck. It's totally fine because mm-hmm. your commander is letting you do a much more powerful card draw anyway.
Yep.
So even if you're drawing into a bunch of lands and you're playing a five-color deck and you're worried about your man base, it's really not a big deal as long as you're able to do Golos maybe two turns earlier because of some other kind of ramp.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, powerful commander in, you know, higher-end Magic is going to be a powerful commander in budget Magic for the most part.
One of the things I really loved about playing with you so many games last night was the fact that we saw all these cards and we kept being like, you know, wait, what is that exactly? Yeah. What is that exactly
doing?
Do?
Taking
and
a picture of it with your phone.
Yeah. Because it's so easy for us to get kind of, I mean, I'll cop to it, a little bit lazy with deck building. It's like, hey, I'm going to build this deck. It needs some ramp. Well, I'm just going to go to Rampant Growth and the Cultivates and everything and the normal stuff. And those are kind of already predecided. Mm. And I don't really spend a lot of time thinking about those. I'm really thinking about, you know, 27, 28 cards, sure. maybe 30 cards. So I think the fact that budget has all these other options for some of that stuff out of necessity means that there is a bunch of stuff out there that's just unused that is really good. And yep. there was a couple of cards last night where I was like, oh, well, I should probably play that in this deck or that deck, not because of budget, just because the card's good.
Yep. Yeah.
So
it kind of forces you to kind of like dig a little deeper and do a little more searching if then potentially if, you know, you're just like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to include Cyclonic Rift because obviously it's a blue deck. So
totally.
You need to find kind of those replacements for those staples.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of them out there.
The Rivers Rebukes instead of the Cyclonic
yeah,
Rifts.
Or yeah, Aether Gale, or those kind of
they've done a lot now, actually. Yep. It's surprising. So,
all right. To the listeners, what are your favorite budget-friendly decks and or cards that we didn't mention in this episode? We'd love to hear from you. And I'm sure everybody else who's working with a budget would also love to read those comments and be like, oh, hey, let me check that card out.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd like to see it too.
Yeah, oh, I mean, please give me all your secrets and texts, please. I'll just put them in my decks and I won't give you any credit.
He needs to make 3 videos a week, so yeah. he needs help.
don't say that. You're going to hold me to that and people are going to be like, oh, he needs 3.
He needs to make 5 videos a week. So.
Oh my goodness.
Well, so next week, I'm going to get some comments.
One thing we can give you credit for, though, is using our affiliate link to buy some of these amazing cards we talked about today, or if you thought, oh my gosh, there is this budget card that no one talks about. I need to get a couple more copies of it. Head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. Plain fast shipping, too. You'll get it in time for your next game night. Promise you that much.
One thing I really like, actually, about Card Kingdom, I do use them for this often, is when you're buying a lot of inexpensive cards, it's better to buy all from one seller rather than a marketplace where you're going to get a bunch of different sellers and get individual shipping and handling on all of those. It actually does make sense. Like when I was building my Feather deck, I was like, oh, thank God for Card Kingdom because I can just package all these 60 commons together and just pay one shipping and handling all at once.
Yeah, a lot of times those stores will require you to have like $2 minimum order and then all of a sudden you're paying 50 cents here, 20 cents there, and your budget all of a sudden exploded on you.
Yeah, so definitely Card Kingdom. Check them out. Another place to go or another sponsor of the show that's going to protect all the cards that you buy is Ultra Pro. We talk about all the time the Eclipse sleeves, which are the best sleeves on the market. Also, the Satin Towers, which Jimmy and I have been plugging lately because I think they are really great deck boxes for key. They're super solid, so your deck's just gonna be totally fine. Also, of course, Ultra Pro makes the best playmats, and if you want to protect all of your battlefield, they're the ones to go with. One final call out for our Kickstarter. We just launched it. If you want to help us upgrade our computers so Jimmy's will stop crashing all the lights in the building and all.
Yeah, we had to flip the breaker. Oh, gosh. It's so scary when it all goes down. I hit render and then you go, you're like, oh, no, the server's down. Everyone's rushing around. But more notably, the Kickstarter also has some exclusive rewards if you want to get this awesome Game Night coin to help remember your triggers. It says only one may stand with an awesome sword and shield on the back. And then, of course, the Game Night logo on the front. It's got a nice hefty weight, too.
Oh, yeah.
If you can do coin tricks, you go nuts.
Yeah, I can't do that.
So yeah, make sure you check out the Kickstarter. The links are below. It's running for 30 days. Once that Kickstarter is over, you will not be able to receive any of the exclusive rewards involved in there. And we have some really interesting ones, especially if you're looking on the higher side of things. There are some really interesting ones, so we definitely recommend you check it out.
All right, now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. Mitch, you're up. This is the guest responsibility to come up with an end step.
Did you say Europe as in like Europe?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Are we talking about Europe?
Are we talking about Europe?
We were talking about this the other or last night.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
Yeah, yeah. Went to Oktoberfest actually with my wife and some friends, and it's just a lot of fun.
How long were you there?
We were in Germany, I think it was 5 days. We went to Berchtesgaden first, which is a small, really beautiful kind of mountain town.
Yeah.
And then we went to Oktoberfest you can only usually handle that for a couple of days. So
we were
there for 2 days.
You get pretty, it takes a toll on your body.
It does take a toll on you.
Uh, I do love, though, that the beer is it's three ingredients, right? Minimum or something. Like, you can't brew it with more than a few ingredients.
I think it's four. The Rheinskvav. There's going to be some people giving me crap about that.
I'm trying. You can do the research as well out there.
Yeah. But yeah, they brew with simple, they have certain laws, I believe, that you only can brew with certain ingredients for certain kinds of beers or whatnot. So,
fortunately, we have no laws when it comes to brewing decks.
Exactly.
So we can do whatever we want, put whatever budget cards we want in there.
Yeah. Was this a trip you've been planning for a while, or?
Yeah, it's a trip. Actually, for Oktoberfest, you really have to plan that kind of like over a year in advance, because the way that it works, you have like the tents essentially at Oktoberfest, and you have to have a table reserved to actually get served. So you need that table reservation, and those get sold out years and years in advance. Yeah. So it's something you've got to plan for if you plan on going.
Did you wear some lederhosen?
I did.
Nice.
Are there any pictures?
I can provide some pictures.
Sweet.
But yes.
You really should
subscribe to his channel if you want to see him in lederhosen.
Yeah, exactly.
Five videos a week and pictures of him in lederhosen, we promise.
Speaking of your channel, where can we find it? And where can we find you on Twitter and all those other social
platforms? Yeah, sure. The Commander's Quarters is the YouTube channel. EDH Quarters, because Commander's Quarters is too long for Twitter. And then Facebook, Instagram, I believe, are just The Commander's Quarters.
Nice. Well, make sure you check out Mitch. One, if you want to hear a sultry, sweet, smooth voice describe to you how you can buy budget and build a deck for like $25, pretty amazing. So yeah, make sure you go check him out and subscribe. And you know what? While you're there, let him know that the Command Zone sent you.
Yeah.
It's the fastest growing Magic YouTube channel.
Yeah, you want to get in on it.
According to these guys.
Yeah. Do you want, you can make it. Actually, if it's not, we're going to make it. So let's go.
Another really cool Magic YouTube channel and podcast is the Masters of Modern, our sister podcast. Alex Kessler, Ben Bateman, they talk about the modern format and all things competitive Magic. You can find them on Twitter at the MMcast, or just type Masters of Modern into your YouTube search bar or any podcast app, and they're going to pop right up.
And our editing and graphics team just updated, so now that you know all of the people that you're also supporting with the Kickstarter.
I thought it was probably not fair that we only mention the two people that normally work on the podcast, because we don't also call out our editors and Game Nights and Extra Turns.
Right.
So I think it's fair. Our whole editing team works on all of our stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're going to update this. We're just going to name them all from now on. So ready, Jimmy, go.
The Command Zone team is Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Terry Robertson, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Sam Waldo, and of course, Alfred Estaca, because he handles sending out all of those very important shipments for the winners of each Game Nights episode.
So thanks, team.
Thanks, team. You guys rock.
All right.
And of course, special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer. Of course, he does the living card animations behind us and also start and end our show at youtube.com/commandzonepodcast. You can find him at livingcardsmtg on Twitter.
All right, Mitch. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, everybody out there, for watching.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.